Congressman Jamaal Bowman, thank you for joining us on Upfront.
Of course, brother. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. In the run-up to the U.S. midterm elections, the Republicans had a clear message. They were talking about the economy, and they were talking about crime. Democrats, on the other hand, they centered theirs on the fallout from the gutting of abortion rights, and they also had a kind of abstract narrative of the future of democracy. The initial impression from many was that Democratic messaging wasn't quite galvanizing voters. It wasn't quite doing the job. However, it does seem to have had an impact. Not enough to retain control of the House of Representatives, apparently, but an impact. Do you think Democratic messaging needs to change?
I think it needs to be sharpened for sure. And I think there are challenges when you're trying to communicate to a so-called Big Ten. A lot more diversity in the Democratic Party. A lot of people coming from different backgrounds, coming with different ideas. You have to understand how to leverage the different voices in the party to communicate to a diverse constituency. So, you know, what was good about the election results so far, and there are still many races to be determined, we saw a large showing from Gen Z and young people overall, a large showing from people of color. But we also saw that MAGA Republicans and those who were riding with Donald Trump didn't do as well as the media would lead you to believe. So, you know, the red tsunami or the red wave, if you will, that was predicted doesn't seem to have taken place. And the House hasn't been determined yet. So we still got an outside shot to keep that and also keep the Senate. So we'll see how that goes.
Absolutely. An outside shot for sure. And you're right. Republicans didn't have the red tsunami that they predicted. But what they have is just enough power, just enough votes, just enough seats, it seems, to derail anything that Democrats want to do this upcoming congressional season. What does that mean for the Democratic agenda?
Yeah, so particularly in the House, I am not looking forward to being in the minority. But as you know, policies don't become law until they pass the House and the Senate. So the fact that the Senate might still remain in our favor is actually right for collaboration if Republicans are ready, willing, and able to do that.
No, I gotta pause you there because I agree, right? In the abstract, that is true. That's actually how government is supposed to work. You got different chambers, you got different people in power, you work together, you compromise, you advance policy. But that's not what actually happens, right? What we've seen is obstruction. What we've seen is gridlock. What we've seen is frustration from everybody, frankly, including the voters, that nothing's going to get done. So when you look for, you're not expecting, I mean, let's be honest, you're not expecting partisan, bipartisanship and collaboration. You're expecting a fight.
I mean, listen, yes, I'm expecting a fight, but I'm also an optimistic person. And even this past cycle, we got two bipartisan pieces of legislation done, the Infrastructure Bill and the Safer Communities Act after the horrible Uvalde shooting, which has a huge focus on mental health supports and pushing a lot of resources there. And obviously, we got the American Rescue Plan done, the CHIPS Act, which was also bipartisan, a third piece of bipartisan legislation, and the Inflation Reduction Act. Again, high hopes, we'll see.
You know, I'm old enough to remember a time before Donald Trump when a former U.S. president, Barack Obama, also is facing obstruction. This is pre-MAGA, right? There's just a sense that Republicans aren't going to collaborate or cooperate with you. But it seems to me that even when you had both chambers of the Congress, right, which we just saw, a Democratic majority for 2 years, we didn't see significant legislation on key issues that matter. I hear you on some bipartisan bills. I hear you on some centrist policies, and I hear you on a kind of public response to a mass shooting, which we should be able to come together on. But what about the stuff that voters vote for you for and vote for other people for? Reproductive justice, reproductive rights, environmental policy, gun control, minimum wage, a universal minimum wage, a living wage even. These are things that people come to you all for, and we weren't able to get it done when you all controlled both chambers of Congress. I know you're optimistic. I know you're filled with hope. But, like, what do I have any reason to believe that we're going to get anything done in the next 2 years?
Yeah, so add to that list voting rights. Add to that list the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. You know, there are many pieces of legislation that we did not get done. Historic investments in housing, going bigger on climate. But as you know, we had control of the House, control of the Senate, but there was a very slim majority. And if there were Democrats who weren't on board with policies that we were pushing, they were not going to support those policies. Enter Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, right? So it's not only Republicans who are pushing back against the policies the American people want. It's often Democrats. It's often connected to big money in politics.
Why?
That's a fight.
No, let me pause you, because you just said something that's super interesting to me. Because you started by saying, look, we're a big tent. Basically, anybody who's not a Republican is going to be on our side. And so we have to appeal to different ideological camps, different interests, different politics. I get that. But some of this isn't about different ideology. Some of this is about what you just started to allude to, which is special interests, corporate interests, also just flat-out careerism and opportunism. Help me understand why Republicans are able to speak in a single voice, even though they have ideological diversity. But when it comes to Democrats, outside of the big tent argument, why is it so hard for you all to come together on things that it seems like voters are sending you to Congress to fight for?
Yeah, I think too many Democrats have compromised themselves to the corporate interest and the corporate lobby. And many of them have come to Congress and gotten rich and or wealthy and work with wealthy lobbyists to make sure they remain in Congress and fight for policy that support the wealthy in lieu of but doesn't support working class people. We saw that from Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema, and many members in the House as well continue to acquiesce to the corporate agenda in Congress. And that's part of the problem.
Do you feel like you're getting a greater consensus for the type of work you do? We see the Working Families Party, we see DSA, we see all these organizations sort of expanding representation in Congress, but we also see significant pushback to that. How are you feeling about the actual political direction of the Congress, or specifically Democrats in the Congress?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I mean, we have other progressives who are going to be coming to Congress this cycle, but not just in Congress. I mean, we saw historic races being won at the state level as well. Governor of Massachusetts is one example of that. So we need to keep organizing to win congressional seats, as well as state, county, and municipal seats, and even school boards, man, because school boards are still implementing education policy that is harmful to black and brown kids in school districts across the country.
Earlier, you talked about Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, and one of the key spaces where they have absolutely been at odds with at least the heart of the Democratic Party is immigration reform. Immigration has been a priority issue for Democrats. At least you've expressed that it is. But there has yet to be a cohesive party line. In 2021, there was a social spending plan that would have helped undocumented immigrants with their legal status. It got blocked. Again, Senators Manchin and Sinema were right in the mix of that. Why is there no clear, unified stance on immigration?
We often, in my opinion, are responding to the fear-mongering of Republicans and the media narrative around that, as opposed to telling the true story around immigration reform and how much immigrants matter to our country. Our economy thrives when we have a robust, healthy immigration system. Global footprint and global standing improves when we treat immigrants who are coming here seeking asylum with the utmost dignity and respect. We also have to tell the true story about how our foreign policy has been destructive to the Northern Triangle and many other countries that contributes to immigrants coming here in the first place. We are literally, along with many of our allies in Europe and Canada, are destroying ecosystems in places like Honduras, Guatemala, and others, which is leading to the need to come to America because we have been so destructive while continuing to fund their military and police operations. So it's really important for us to tell the truth about that, to not be afraid of that, because as we know,
is the party afraid though? I mean, you're talking about global capitalism, global imperialism. You're raising some big issues. And I hear you say it. I hear Rashida Tlaib say it. I hear Ilhan Omar say it. I occasionally hear AOC say it. But what I'm not hearing is that being the heartbeat of the Democratic Party. Is that fear, or is that just, are you just on the ideological minority?
Well, yes and yes, right? So it is fear, because I think members of my party who are older and from different parts of the country can speak to these issues as well without the backlash that they are afraid to receive if they do speak about them. It is ideological as well, and it speaks to some of the shifts that are happening in the party towards a more progressive understanding of both, not just domestic issues, but foreign policy issues. So, you know, my job is to make sure I'm speaking truth and being responsive and representing my district in the way they want me to represent them on this issue of immigration and many others. I mean, a third of my district are immigrants. So, you know, I represent them, and I need to represent them with truth.
You know, when I look on the Republican side, I see DeSantis, I see Nikki Haley, I see other folk who might be the heir apparent, or, you know, who are at least in the conversation. On the other side, I don't see anybody right now who is next in line after President Biden. Biden was elected not because he was the most dazzling or energizing candidate, but because voters quite pragmatically said that person can beat Trump, right? Right now, he's polling around 42%, which is, you know, not unusual during a midterm. But the question is, who else is there? Who else can... Kamala Harris is polling lower than that. And out in the congressional landscape and in governor's houses around the country, I don't see anybody who seems poised to be next in line. Does that worry you? Are you worried about the future of the Democratic Party, particularly as it pertains to the White House?
So I see a deep bench for the Democratic Party. Everyone from Elizabeth Warren to Gavin Newsom, to the governor of Michigan, to myself, to AOC, to Ayanna Presley. There are many incredibly talented, dynamic people who can galvanize the country and get them excited about what this country is supposed to be. We haven't, as you know, we haven't really done the work of meeting the ideals of our Constitution and our democracy. You know, the question for me is, what does that look like, and how could we galvanize the American people to get there? And I think everyone I just named has the ability to do that if they really embrace the beautiful diversity of our country and really unlock the potential of that diversity.
For the White House,
Obama,
though,
I think they do it.
For the White House, though, do you see any of those people able to step into the role of presidential candidate? I mean, will we see a President AOC? Will we see a you know what I mean? Will we see a President Bowman? Is this what we're talking about? Is that possible?
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I that's how I'm thinking, and I think that's how other people are thinking as well. And I think that's what the country, you know, I had a chance to do some traveling throughout this election cycle. And I was in Michigan, I was in Georgia, I was in Arizona, I was in Pennsylvania, and the energy is there, and people are passionately looking for visionary leadership. And I think, yes, there's a possibility for all of that, for sure.
Congressman Jamal Bowman, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront.
Thank you, brother. Good to be with you.